time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
Tom Brady is my Lord and Savior.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we're rolling along on a Thursday, and we're already making fun of each other. So it should be a good day. I'm Vanessa Richardson. That is Pauly G.
Yo.
And then Sean Mapes behind the glass, as always. We'll get to the Astros. We'll get to all the new deals happening in the NFL. But we had a little presser with Casario yesterday.
Boots on the ground.
Are we the only radio show in town that had every person from the radio show there? And by every person, I mean me and you.
Yes. And you didn't even know I was there.
I didn't. So I'm listening to this press conference. I'm taking it in. And so I text our group chat, which is Paul and our producer, Sean. And I'm like, here are some of the highlights so far. And then I hear a voice from behind me that I actually, believe it or not, you have a similar voice to my guy, Jeff Darlington, that works at ESPN.
Ah.
And I thought, why is Jeff at a Texans press conference? And then I looked back and it was one Pauly Maurice.
Yeah, because I sit in the back because I'm a cool kid and you sit in the front because you're a nerd.
Yeah. Whatever.
You had the better camera angle for your phone, which you were recording the press conference on. So,
I did.
Understandable.
We were boots on the ground, though, but it was
Big J
good to see you there. Big J journalist. And yeah, I texted him and then I heard his voice and I was like, oh, we in here.
We were in person for all of Nick Casario's many, many words.
He uses a lot of words.
He does.
Kind of the opposite of the person that he learned under, Bill Belichick, who will give you two, maybe three sentences. Nick will give you a dissertation on one player who has been cut, as I found out when I asked him about Ross Blacklock, and you found out when you asked him about Max Scherping.
Both were very good players here. That's what we learned for Nick Casario.
Yeah, you heard John and Lance talking about that.
Very polite. I understand it. And you know what? I get that his approach is different than Belichick's approach, because Belichick's approach makes everyone mad. Casario's approach just, like the college professor that would go on and on and on. You kind of start falling asleep or maybe thinking to yourself, hey, what do I have to do later today as he continues to talk?
Nick Casario has gotten, I don't want to say better because that would imply that he didn't know what he was doing and he always has. But he is now giving some more nuggets of information to where at first he would say a lot of words but not actually say anything.
Yep.
Granted, this was during the Deshaun Watson year, and this was during the year where there were questions about Jack Easterby and all of that. So there were things that he couldn't really talk about but still had to answer. Now I think he's actually comfortable giving context as to why he cut or traded Ross Blacklock, context as to why he's obsessed with Jerry Hughes and whatnot. So I do think we're hearing more from Nick Casario, which is refreshing.
Yes. What was most refreshing to you at the press conference that we were at yesterday, though?
Most refreshing to me was when he talked about he and Lovie Smith collaborating. I thought that was nice. I don't have to tell anybody that's followed the Texans, been a Texans fan, or has even been national media that there hasn't always been collaboration among this franchise. And we could really go in the weeds to public relations people relating to marketing people and how one person might have turned on a head coach and how that head coach had turned on a general manager. I mean, this was a Game of Thrones style type atmosphere for a while. And that's not, well, it is dramatic to say because no one was killing each other. But it was known to not be very peaceful.
It's been bad, yes.
The fact that now there's collaboration and there's collaboration among Lovie, who is considered to be an old school head coach, but that is semi-modern, and then an analytics-driven GM from New England. I like knowing that they are getting along, and it does seem genuine. What about you? What was the most refreshing thing?
Same
to you?
Thing, because I've Twinsies. Been here for the Game of Thrones BS,
yep.
And I remember going back to 2017 when I was being misled as to what was actually taking place at Kirby Drive. I remember thinking to myself as I was at Stone's Throw, waiting for a New Year's party to kick off, I was on my phone wondering, okay, is Bill O'Brien about to get fired?
Yeah.
That was my impression. Is Rick Smith going to keep his job? And there was a bunch of other things that have never been revealed that I don't think are still allowed to be revealed about how that battle went down and how Bill O'Brien found his way towards having all of the power in the organization. But then he brings in Brian Gain, who he finds out he doesn't like. And then all of a sudden, he wants all of the power. So look, Gary Kubiak and Rick Smith, I think, had a better relationship if we go way, way back in time to when I first started working here.
Right.
But it's been an acrimonious relationship between the general manager and head coach with this organization for quite some time. I don't know that this will continue, and I think it's important to remember that right now. We're talking on September 1st of 2022. They have not even played a game of Lovie Smith's first season as a head coach of this team. But it's nice to hear that there is a respectful relationship between the two guys who have been in the league for a really long time. Caserio with the best organization in the history of mankind, and Lovie Smith, of course, who...
In the history of mankind.
It is. Yeah. Roman Empire, the United States of America, the New England Patriots.
Why don't we hear Lovie talk about, or excuse me, why don't we hear Nick talk about his good friend Lovie and their nice relationship?
It was awesome. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, we talked, I would say, fairly regularly, obviously, over the last, you know, probably 5 to 7 days. But I think our job, and we have fiduciary responsibility to each other. I mean, me to him, him to me, you know, it's reciprocal. I think he's very open-minded. And what we try to do is take all the information in from the staff as well, because from a coach's perspective, and I've been in that situation, you invest a lot of time, a lot of energy on a professional level, on a personal level with that player. So their viewpoint, their opinion of that player, their interaction with the player, like that matters to us. So it'd be irresponsible of us not to take that information in. Ultimately, Lovie and I have to sit, we have to take everything in, and then make the decisions that we feel make the most sense for our team.
The general manager has to give the coach what he wants. The coach has to give honest feedback on the materials that he's given, because if he doesn't, then you might find yourself in a spot where two people are all of a sudden yelling at each other, bickering about one player that they disagree on. So right now, again, it's early, and we have not even played a single game yet, so this could change easily. I just like hearing that there are good vibes.
Yeah, good. The vibes are immaculate, as the kids say. It is bussing for real, for real.
On God.
Right. On God. Okay, so that game will be against the Indianapolis Colts. It will be here September 11th. And Nick Caserio is not focused on the future or the past. Here's what he said about where his focus is.
The training camp portion is behind us. The preseason is behind us. Off to a decent start. Now we kind of reset and recalibrate here, and it's time to get ready to play real football. And really our focus turns to the Colts, and that'll be the first challenge in front of us next week. They got a good football team. Certainly a big challenge in front of us. I mean, they kicked our ass twice last year, so we got a lot of work in front of us, and hopefully we have a good week of work tomorrow. Players are off for 3 days, and then next week they'll come back in with the right mindset and get ready to play against the Colts and try to take advantage of the opportunity in the opener, you know, a week from Sunday.
I have a question for you, because you were here for all of last season. Remember, last season and this past offseason, we talked a whole lot about how Nick Caserio might have had actually a little bit of input on game day with David Culley.
And whatnot.
Do you think that that's still the case? Because the way that you hear Nick Caserio talking about the game approach, it does make me feel like maybe he is still involved in prepping for the game in addition to doing all the things that a general manager is supposed to.
He was on Pat McAfee a couple of months ago and had talked about how his role and the way that he came up is just different. And look, I mean, credit where it's due. He was with the Patriots, and they have non-traditional roles for different coaches, different scouts and whatnot. He made it sound like he wears the headset but says a minimum. Like he just kind of wants to be in the know of what's going on. I don't think it's necessary, but I'm fine with it. But I do. Yeah. I mean,
I like it.
I think he's still going to very much be involved. I think if you're Lovie Smith, we've talked about this, how there are certain things with this organization that Lovie Smith and Pep Hamilton and their special teams guy, Frank, have probably huddled in a corner and said, we cannot change this. Whether it's Easterby is here, whether it's they love Rex Burkhead. There are just certain things, and I think one of those things that they maybe don't love, but they accept, is that Nick's going to be on head. That's my best guess.
You're probably right that they don't enjoy it. I don't think it's a bad resource to have. The guy did a lot of different things in New England, and I know that there are still some who are skeptical of him. I got to say, and I asked him about this, and he said he doesn't expect anything out of players when you first bring them in. You draft them, and you hope for the best, but I mean, with already the returns on this year's draft class, you're seeing guys that have earned their way into the starting lineup, where it's not just Derek Stingley Jr. and Kenyon Green, who seems to have already made up a lot of the ground that he missed being out of training camp so long. I got to say, credit to him for getting up to speed. But Damian Pierce, it's Jalen Petrie. I mean, I feel like people should be feeling a lot better about Caserio now. Things can obviously change over a 17-game season, though.
And he was honest, though. Somebody asked him about Kenyon Green and a couple of the other guys, and he was honest about who, look, this person is still a rookie, or look, they have ground to make up because they were out for a few weeks. So I do think we're getting a little bit more of an open Nick Caserio, which, of course, anything compared to what we've had in the past here in Houston is refreshing. Speaking of refreshing, coming up, I'm talking about one of Paul's favorite quarterbacks. It's a great day for him. And how Russ's new contract is going to affect kind of a domino effect in the league. That's next.
Loot and Raider rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
5 years, $245 million, 165 guaranteed for Russell Wilson before he even takes a snap in Denver. That is what Adam Schefter let us know about an hour ago. We'll get to the details in a second. I have a thread that Tom Pelissero tweeted that I think is good context. As a former Seattle radio host and noted Russell Wilson hater, your initial reaction?
He has everything that he's ever wanted now. One of the big issues that he had when he was in Seattle is that the Seahawks did not want to give him an extension before he was due for an extension. I would say rightfully so, given what we've seen in the second half of the last couple of years. This is a guy who is very reliant on his feet and his ability to escape the pocket. He is a shorter guy. It helps to get outside the pocket so you can actually see downfield. And a guy who at times seemed to be more about trying to throw the football downfield as opposed to taking what's right in front of him. That got very frustrating to me. And in addition to that, the way that he used his agent to just annoy the hell out of the Seahawks and force his way out of town eventually.
In a very passive-aggressive way.
Exactly. And his agent did not do it passive-aggressively. His agent did it aggressively. But Russ never actually did it. He just had his boogeyman do it for him. And the Seahawks...
Well, remember when he said, I wouldn't leave, but if I did, it would be to one of these four teams.
Yes. Yeah. And there was more. There was so much more than that. And look, to the Seahawks' credit, they never shot back. And they should have. I wanted them to. Pete Carroll's a really nice guy. He's not that kind of person. John Schneider, their GM, definitely has some issues with Russell Wilson's agent, Mark Rogers. He kept silent, which I'll give him credit. Yeah, because I know it. I know how he feels about the entire situation. They moved on, and there's a part of me that thinks to myself, does Russ really think that he can carry the weight of the world on his shoulders the way that he does? Because, and I've joked about this before, but that Seahawks defense got him to one Super Bowl, and it was never a contest. They won 43-8 against the Denver Broncos. And the greatest offense that the NFL had ever seen statistically to that point, at least based off of what Peyton Manning did that year. The next year they get back against New England, and while the Seahawks defense collapsed down the stretch, it was Russell Wilson that threw the interception that sealed the game. So I joke about how he actually has zero.
Yeah, zero because they cancel out.
The defense won one Super Bowl for him, and he lost the other Super Bowl for him. So yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works.
It's and which it doesn't, by the way. That's me just joking. He has everything he wants now.
Yeah.
He has that contract, he has that security, and I don't believe that he is going to live up to what he is getting paid. I just don't.
We don't even know how this team gels together yet.
Exactly.
And it's not always, it does not always look on the field as it does on paper. Sean, what was your initial reaction when you saw these numbers?
I was surprised, and maybe I'm missing something, but that it's not fully guaranteed. Because wasn't that the, after the Deshaun Watson, I mean, we talked about the agent survey yesterday where everyone was like, you know, it's awful, but great deal. It's going to set the market for quarterbacks going forward. And I just wonder what the, you know, what the hesitancy or what, I mean, obviously the Broncos didn't want to give him a fully guaranteed contract. Why not? And what are their kind of questions with it? Is it just because they've literally never seen him play for their
team
before?
I'm glad you brought this up because Tom Pelissero, I thought, who is really good with numbers, had an interesting tweet. He gives the contract numbers for Russell Wilson. It's basically a $33 million raise in 2022 from $24 million to $57 million. He gets $85 over 2 years. He then goes on to tweet in a series of kind of thread-type format. Fair to say Wilson's cash flow is well short of Aaron Rodgers, which is $150.8 million over 3 years, and Deshaun Watson, $138 million. Kyler Murray got $106.15 million over 3 years with little leverage entering a cheap year four on his rookie deal.
Rodgers has won two MVPs in a row. And in the situation with Deshaun Watson, it's the Browns. I think the whole NFL is probably looking at the Browns right now and saying, yeah, we're not going to copy him. We are not going to establish further precedent so that quarterbacks need to get paid all of their money. And that sucks for Lamar Jackson, but it's also the correct approach with Lamar Jackson. I like Lamar Jackson a lot. He's an MVP. He deserves the contract that Deshaun Watson got from that perspective. But would I, if I were the general manager of the Ravens, be willing to give it to him? No. In this situation, too, it's the same thing. You do need to have, I think, some escape clauses here just because of what Russell Wilson has looked like in the second half of the last couple of seasons. And there have been moments where Russell Wilson has been good. Do not get me wrong. I don't think Russell Wilson has been bad. I just think there have been moments where he does not look like the quarterback that in 2019 and in the first half of 2020 he was. And I would argue that in 2019 and in the first half of 2020 that he was the second best quarterback in the NFL.
Why do you think he was comfortable and his agent, Mark Rogers, comfortable with getting less guaranteed money? Is it because he hasn't played? Is it because they're self-aware enough to know that he might not go to another? I mean, why do you think he's comfortable with less guaranteed cash?
Because they are going to do the exact same thing that they did before in Seattle when this contract gets a couple of years down the road. Russell Wilson and Mark Rogers have been extremely tough negotiators, and you can go back to the first time that they had a contract extension talk where there was some of the same conversation. Hey, is Russell Wilson still going to be here in Seattle after the fact? This is what he does. This is what Mark Rogers does. 3 years from now, they will be talking about a new contract already. And I think that that's maybe also another reality that NFL teams are going to have to deal with going forward. Do we think that Patrick Mahomes is going to stick to this long contract that looks great at first, but over time when other quarterbacks are getting paid more than him, he's going to be like, yeah, I'm fine with this. I don't think so.
Okay, so let's talk about his age. He's going to be 34 when the Broncos season starts.
Well, you say like that, that's a bad thing.
Well, for a quarterback.
Hey.
So this ties him to Denver for the rest of his career, no?
Yeah, well, probably. Probably, but he's claiming he's going to play 12 more years.
Nah, I don't buy it.
Yes, he wants to be Tom Brady. I've said this before. It's the photo shoots that he does in Florence with his celebrity wife, Ciara.
My goodies.
He is all about legacy, brand himself. Nothing wrong with that if you're a quarterback, by the way. Who wouldn't be like that? I'm just saying this guy has, I think, some delusions that he hasn't quite realized with the last couple of seasons. He feels like the situation he was in Seattle was holding him back. And I'd argue that Seattle did exactly what he needs. He has the best deep ball accuracy in the league. And throwing to guys like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett downfield, which is an incredible 1-2 combination at wide receiver, it's been really good. But you need to have a running game that's respectable to set that up. And, you know, when the Seahawks offense started looking a little bit better last year at the end of the year, it's no coincidence that Rashad Penny, their running back, like from, I think, week 13 through 18, led the NFL in rushing. And he feels, no, we need to throw more. Let Russ cook. Like, he's trademarking that.
Let Russ cook. Let's talk about how this relates to the other quarterbacks in the league. We know Lamar Jackson has said that he has no problem playing this season without that new contract, and he said that he's not going to negotiate a new contract during the season. Does Lamar play the waiting game and wait until next year when he potentially could get even more money? Does he pull kind of the Kirk Cousins, who at one point, believe it or not, ladies and gents, was the highest paid quarterback in the league? Do you think Lamar waits now that he sees this number?
It's hard to think.
Because Lamar and Joe Burrow. Don't forget, Joe Burrow eventually is due for new money too.
What would you do? You have representation.
I do.
I do not have representation. I don't know how to go about say, and this is not, hey, Mr. Gow, you know, I'm not, this is not me. This is not me saying I'm about to do this. This is a theoretical situation. If you didn't have an agent, how would you approach this? Because it's hard to determine what the hell Lamar Jackson is doing right now because he doesn't have an agent. We're hearing nothing. And it doesn't seem like he's giving the Ravens a whole lot back.
He's also giving the media nothing, which I absolutely love to hear these people that are like, well, I've talked to guys on the team and they say Lamar is still working out because his agent is his mom. So they're not getting any info at all. I mean, if you're Lamar, the buffer is supposed to be the agent. You're supposed to be able to have a good relationship with your employer. And then if you want more money, if you want more anything, your agent steps in and is the quote unquote bad cop. It's like good cop, bad cop. To envision Lamar and his mother talking to Steve Bisciotti, and his mom, by the way, is the one that said, my baby will be a quarterback, despite what all of you are saying. I don't want to say it's awkward, but I think it potentially could turn awkward if you look at the fact that he still doesn't have a contract.
I can also see the fact that he doesn't have an agent as something where he might be more willing to do this. I mean, it's a riskier plan of playing out his contract till the end, hoping to get that giant payday because, you know, athletes are never really going to think, oh, man, what if I get hurt? Because if you're an NFL quarterback or an NFL player, you can't really think like that going into a season of like, oh, what if I don't bounce back? What if I don't – I'm not still that guy that I was 2 years ago. So
right.
I can see that also as a factor of him being a little bit more – taking on a little bit more risk in how he's negotiating this contract. But also – I mean, Deshaun Watson had a lot of stuff going on, and he got an awesome contract.
But
so I can see from his perspective how he's like, even if I do get hurt, I mean, like the Browns just paid a guy who like there's always going to be a sucker out there, a Browns out there who's going to throw insane money at a quarterback. Like Vanessa mentioned at the start of this conversation, someone did that with Kirk Cousins. So
right.
I think getting to the open market actually isn't the worst thing if you are a quarterback.
I'm glad you brought up Watson because Watson's a little more similar in that Watson occasionally runs. Cousins does not run at all. But both of those guys are quarterbacks that you're not expecting to put their body on the line, what, like 15 times a game like
right.
you are with Lamar Jackson? Because that's the tricky thing here. And that's why, you know, if I'm a GM, I'm like offering him a 2-year deal, 3-year deal. And I guarantee probably the first two or something like that. And he's not going to want that. Like, it's a crappy situation to be in if you are the Ravens.
Mike Florio just released an article that I think is interesting. Lack of fully guaranteed contract for Wilson counts as a win for the NFL. And it basically makes it sound like the owners are happy that nobody else has gotten that much fully guaranteed. The takeaway from a source with extensive knowledge of the contracts negotiated by the NFL teams, quote, I don't see another fully guaranteed quarterback contract anytime soon. That was a concern among the owners
mm-hmm.
that Deshaun and David Mulugeta's deal was going to set a precedent no. for fully guaranteed contracts.
Browns just be dumb.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Browns be Brownsing.
And related, we'll see about the Joe Burrow contract because the Bengals might be Bengalsing.
The Bengals
yeah,
could be Bengals.
It would
be very, as somebody from Indiana, it would be like, typical Ohio, right?
Imagine them screwing that up. Like
both of them.
They get the biggest, like, last year was a miracle.
Gift. Yeah, Jamar Chase falling. Yeah.
That and, I mean, they made it to the Super Bowl. They had no business being in that Super Bowl. They deserve a lot of credit for getting there, but, like, there's a reason no one is, like, really putting a lot of respect on them going into this season, and they would be the team to screw this up.
There you go. All right. Hey, listen to me. I got something to talk about, and it's not Russell Wilson's new home. It's your home.
Oh!
Grab your phone. Our friends at TGS are going to make it easy to get better insurance and save a lot of money. They have a new system. It instantly shops over 36 carriers, and all you have to do is send a text. So get out your phone, text the word money, M-O-N-E-Y, to 232323. Their system is going to ask for your home address. You send it back, and within 15 seconds, my friends, you get those dozens and dozens of rates. This is a legit company. It sounds like a scam because it's so easy. But their online rating is nearly perfect, and their average customer from last year is saving over $870. I know it's a hassle. I know it's not fun, but TGS makes it the easiest it's ever been to shop for home insurance. One more time, text MONEY to 232323. Get your home insurance quote and save big today.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
Seven?
It's a week.
Seven. That's an inside joke from Friends. 7 days until the NFL season. That's exactly a
There's
week
There's no
from
laugh
today.
Track to make that joke work.
Yeah, that's where.
That's
it's
why
about
Friends
an orgasm.
Works.
It's Monica. It's just YouTube it.
Okay.
7 days, Paul. All right. Who is your number seven jersey number?
You got three.
Okay.
This one I was surprised by. I did not know George Halas, who owned the Chicago Bears for the longest time. Actually wore number seven. This is a guy who also was a lesser-known Major League Baseball player for the New York Yankees. Did you know that?
I did not.
These are weird things to learn about him. But the big number seven, it's John Elway. This one's for John! Or it's Michael Vick. How many Michael Vick jerseys did you see during the 2000s? Sorry, dogs.
Who's your other one? Didn't you have a third one?
Yeah, Michael Vick. Michael Vick was three.
Michael Vick was the third one. Yeah. Apparently, I can't count.
So I'm apologizing to all my dogs out there.
Yeah, he got that dog in him, all right. But we do have 7 days until the regular season kicks off. It's been a fun preseason, but I am ready for the real thing. Let's go around the league. We'll start with some Texans news, and we touched on this earlier, but they did add Tyler Johnson, who the Bucs had said didn't have a lot of special teams value. They cut Royce Freeman.
Yeah, so now they only have three active running backs with Dare Ogunbowale.
That was even worse than me.
You're right. Look, it's weird that they are a running team and have three running backs.
And one of them is Rex Burkhead.
Look, they like Rex. I don't think Rex is that bad. Rex had a good game against the Chargers last year. If this offensive line is better, this offensive line is going to determine whether or not these running backs are any good. But, I mean, I think that, I'm just going to say, Dare is going to play a lot of special teams. You saw him play a lot of special teams in the preseason. So you have two guys that are going to get the lion's share of the work. It's good that Marlon Mack's still on their practice squad, I guess, if things do hit the fan. But it is strange to have three active running backs on a roster entering week one.
All right, Aaron Donald obviously went viral last week for whoever thought it was a good idea to have the two Super Bowl teams play each other in a combined practice. I don't know who had that idea. But
terrible idea.
Obviously, there are going to be fights between the Bengals and the Rams, and there were. It involved helmets. It involved swinging. And Aaron Donald had told the media when he met with them, it was just practice. We talk about practice. He kind of pulled an Allen Iverson. He did an interview with CBS Radio's Zach Gelb, and he did not want to talk at all about the practice. He'd rather talk about his doctor.
What happened last week in joint practices? Because we all saw the video of you swinging helmets and people were wondering what was going on there.
It was just a practice. You know, obviously people got phones out and things like that, but I'm not going to sit and talk about negative stuff that happened at a practice. My main focus is Buffalo. So
was there any internal punishment?
We talked. So
were you thinking maybe you were going to get suspended or anything?
Hey, Zach.
I wasn't worried about it. So,
yeah, we're just going to focus just here because Aaron's here today to talk about Dr. Teals. So you do have 2 minutes left if you want to pivot to your last question, please.
No, okay, just one more thing, Aaron, on this, and I'll get to Dr. Teals. What sparked it, just wondering? Because I think people are curious about it.
Well, being a guy that's 31 years old, my main focus is football, obviously. The physical part, you do, but it's more about the recovery thing that I need to do and being a partner with Dr. Teals and be able to use Dr. Teals twice or three times a week to help my body recover. And, you know, I usually soak 15, 20 minutes in the tub.
He's been listening to you.
I was going to say. From the transition queen to the transition king.
That's impressive. I got to say, that's some shameless product placement, but it's damn well done. The PR lady stepping in there is a bad look for the PR lady.
Yeah, you're not a big PR person.
No, I'm not. But whatever. Look, some are good, some aren't. It really varies from place to place. That didn't sound good. Whatever the case, there is an uproar about it. And I'm just not that outraged about it, and I guess I don't care that much about it either. I've seen guys swing helmets at each other. Antonio Smith did it to Richie Incognito. Of course, Myles Garrett did it to Mason Rudolph. A little bit different because Mason Rudolph actually got hit, too, by it, and it was on national TV. But there's a lot of people that are trying to turn this into something, like, bigger than it is. And I don't know, between this and the Aaron Rodgers thing, especially with all these people that are, like, quote tweeting to their, like, echo chamber of followers.
Well,
so that they can get all the
retweets.
Well, I used
to cover sports in Cincinnati, and the anger on my timeline of people that are like, hey, at NFL, what are you going to do? The overwhelming narrative to me here is that every time you hear an NFL player talk about combined practices, they say that they were melees in every single one. Every single one, there was a melee. You're taking two teams that the last time they played each other, it was in a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't a good idea.
No.
Okay. So, let's talk. Never mind. We're not going to do that. Shout out to our producer.
One last thing on this. Look, people need to get a life. This was not a big story.
No, it wasn't.
Like, this stuff happens in practice literally every year. Why is a guy swinging a helmet any different than some guy getting decapitated, going over the middle, someone going low on somebody else? It's a violent sport. And yeah, sometimes brawls break out. And sometimes Aaron Donald uses somebody's helmet to try to hit them with it.
And if you're injured, Donald, go to Dr. Teals.
Yeah.
Joe Burrow would like to go to a an establishment every now and
I'm
then.
I'm still laughing at Sean Mapes waving his hands.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on. I thought the call, quote unquote, was on the on
that,
not.
That's why I had to be clear that to hit the brakes.
The worst call ever, apparently. Now I'm curious. I'm not going to lie.
It's not good. Joe Burrow has gone within the span of 2 years from being able to probably go anywhere in the country and not being recognized to being a celebrity overnight, as Twista says. He talked about fame in a Bengals press conference. Here's Joey Cool. Joe Burrow, are you there?
He's got a chain.
What's the worst part about being a celebrity?
You know, whenever you go in public, it always just feels like a production. You'd like to go out and sit at a dive bar every now and then, but that's not reality.
I did roll my eyes a little bit at this.
The first part I rolled my eyes at, too, and I thought I was going to take Joe Burrow's side no matter what.
I know,
I love Joe Burrow.
We were talking about this on the break. I like Joe Burrow, too. He's a Midwest kid that I think if you look at the way he's galvanized the locker room, he has gotten a lot of good feedback among people in the league saying he can relate to anybody. And we had Ed Ogeron on our show who kind of said that, too. It feels like a production. I'd like to go sit at a dive bar. Okay.
Yeah. What's your favorite dive bar in Houston?
Ooh.
Poison Girl.
Shout out to Lizards.
Lizards
River
is
Oaks.
Fun.
Lizards is my
place. I always
place.
Feel old there, though.
Yeah, it depends on the night of the week. I go there with another radio host in town that works at a competing station and his wife a lot. And we've talked about you have to hit Lizards at the right time or else you get the River Oaks kids home for the summer crowd. And then every song on the jukebox is Justin Bieber and Kesha. So you got to hit it at the right time.
Well, Justin What's your Bieber favorite? And Kesha. Yeah, Poison Girl. Poison Girl's in Montrose. It's fantastic. Also, across the street, another place that I very much enjoy. LaGrange. It's fantastic.
LaGrange. Okay. LaGrange. The Philadelphia Eagles have traded former first-round NFL draft pick Jalen Reagor to the Minnesota Vikings.
Oh, boy, and they didn't get much in return for him. That is a guy that fell out of favor pretty quickly, and if you take a look at that draft class...
Yeah, he only caught 65 passes for 695 yards in 2 seasons, 3 touchdowns over 2 seasons. This is a guy that had really high expectations. He was selected before Justin Jefferson.
Yeah,
safe to say that might not have worked out.
That's the big problem. And look, it's the 21st overall pick. Like, it's hard to really dump on a team for missing at that point in the draft. You know, like, sometimes you just feel good about a wide receiver compared to another, and it can set your franchise back forever. I've become a lot less aggressive when it comes to talking about picks that were made in the first round, because it really is hard to find players in the league.
It's been proven to kind of be a crapshoot.
I mean, just take a look at what we talked about a couple of days ago with all the first round picks that the Raiders have had over the last couple of years that they got in the Khalil Mack trade. And look, we will see the exact same thing with the Houston Texans. Obviously, Deshaun Watson was never going to play here again. Had that massage therapist incident not taken place, I would have tried to keep him around as long as I possibly could, though, because there's a very good chance that all these first round picks that the Texans have don't pan out the way that you want to. And I get very annoyed online or with just people that text in, call in, that are obsessed with the idea of what a first round pick can be. The first round pick can easily be a miss. Ask the Rams, ask the Titans, who had a bunch a couple of years ago, too. These teams that you think, oh, they made a great trade. They have all these first-round picks. What happens if they're just a bad organization and continuously swing and miss? I think we're going to find that out with the New York Jets pretty soon, too, with the draft class that everyone they had that everyone loves. Okay, like, let's wait until they actually play one game, huh?
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, who knew depth charts were this big of a deal? According to one Houston legend, oh, they're a big deal. We're going to talk about that. But first, Paul's going to tell you about boxing.
The big fight. Hell yeah. It's the heavyweight showdown between Andy Ruiz and Luis Ortiz. It's Sunday on Fox. Look, guys, you want to get in on this pay-per-view, and it starts at 8 o'clock Sunday. Andy the Destroyer Ruiz. Luis King Kong Ortiz. Look, Andy Ruiz Jr. is the former champ. King Kong Ortiz is the challenger. And you're also going to see, along the way, Isaac Pitbull Cruz versus Eduardo Ramirez. Wonder how he got the nickname Pitbull. Does he look like Pitbull? Does he like Pitbull? Does he say Dale a lot? It's going down. Playoffs. I'm yelling timber. Playoffs. You're also going to see the return of Abner Maris versus Miguel Flores and Jose Valenzuela against Israel Corrales. But the headline event, it's Andy Ruiz versus Luis Ortiz. And again, it is 8 o'clock Sunday, live on pay-per-view from the Crypto.com Arena in L.A. Look at where you can find your pay-per-view for Fox. Watch the fight. There's nothing else going on Sunday. Make sure that you tune in.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, so I'm not born and raised in Texas, and I have no problem admitting that. So there are certain nuances that you don't know when you move somewhere. Like, I didn't realize beans and chili was a controversy. I didn't understand that you wear hats in certain parts of Texas, but not in others. I didn't know. The other thing I didn't realize depth charts were apparently such a huge thing.
That's everywhere.
For the Hook'em fans. I actually would disagree with that.
Really?
I would completely disagree that depth charts are this, that not releasing a depth chart is this egregious to fan bases. Anwar Richardson, who covers the Hook'em Horns for Yahoo, tweeted this. A UT official says Texas football Steve Sarkisian will not provide a depth chart before the season opener this week.
Hell yeah.
In addition, Sarkisian is not expected to provide a depth chart at all this season.
Hell yeah.
Clearly, things could change, but that's Sarkisian's plan right now. Keep in mind, I grew up an Indiana football fan, so Indiana University is not known for their prestigious football team. So when I say I don't know that people would care, I guess I'm not like the diehard college football fan that a lot of y'all are. This was apparently egregious to certain fans. Before we get into a Houston legend, give me your initial reactions, boys, on a no depth chart.
I will find whatever advantage that I can give myself going into a game against Alabama. And if hiding who my starters are and in who do they play this weekend, Sean? Off the top of my head, I don't
know. Louisiana Lafayette.
Louisiana Monroe.
Roadrunner Central.
The ULM. ULM.
Warhawks.
Warhawks, yes, I thought so. Okay. So, look, this is a preseason game for them. They can do whatever they want. They need to do whatever they can to give themselves an edge in that early game on on the 10th against Alabama. They have to do whatever they can. I have no problem with this. I think anyone who has a problem with this has a stick up their ass. Like, who cares? It's a depth chart. It's a depth chart. Like, you don't actually know who's going to play in a game based off a depth chart anyway.
As much. But you are a UT alum, so yeah. Give me your reaction.
I also don't really care. I understand why the media that covers Texas might be upset just because it probably makes it easier just to whatever.
Good point. When
you're writing your preview column or when you're doing your podcast about it, it's probably just easier to be like, oh, that's who the starting safety is. But for fans, especially because Steve Sarkisian also later, I think he either clarified it or it was another like through officials was like, well, everyone's going to play the first few weeks. Like, we're going to rotate a lot of people in and out. So who's number one? Who's number two? Doesn't really matter that much, and especially in Louisiana Monroe. Like, if you're not in a situation where the backups are playing in Louisiana Monroe, like,
you've got bigger problems than a depth chart.
Exactly. You have bigger problems.
Right. All right. Houston legend, NFL Hall of Fame member John McClain, who a couple months ago retired from the Houston Chronicle, but is very much still active on Twitter and OutKick, had opinions about this. I'm going to read you the first couple of tweets here. Sark not putting out depth charts is one of the, in capital letters, dumbest things I've ever heard. The last time a UT coach did something this stupid was when John Makovic was hired and had the historical pictures lining a hallway taken down.
Can you do McClain's voice?
Mac Brown put them back up when he was hired. Next tweet.
A little closer.
How in the world did Daryl Royal and Mac Brown win national titles putting out weekly depth charts?
A little more gruff.
Can you imagine being a Texas fan, getting your Texas football magazine each summer, turning to the Longhorn section and finding blank pages where the depth chart would be?
I like the accent.
But he goes on, I hope Gary Patterson will restore depth charts once he's promoted to head coach.
He pivots to roast mode, that's when it hits the next level.
I've been following Longhorns football since 1960, says John McClain, when I was 8 and watched them defeat Baylor for the first time. No depth chart is the second dumbest thing I've seen them do. The pole dancing monkey will always be the first, referring, of course, to the coach who had the stripper issue this summer. I hope when the Longhorns play in the Texas Bowl this season at NRG Stadium, Sark will allow them to put out a depth chart. And the last tweet reads, I want to encourage Texas Bowl officials to demand that Sark put out a depth chart. The Longhorns and the Texas Bowl are a Lone Star State tradition.
Oh, wow.
After all, Charlie Strong and Tom Herman also coached in the Texas
Bowl. The Baylor people are so cocky right now. You know what? Deservedly so. They've had a very good last couple of years in athletics, both from a basketball perspective and a football perspective as the defending Big 12 champs. So, you know what? If you're John McClain, take the shots when you can take the shots. It does feel like McClain's taking these shots, though, because he is still scarred by the memories of Texans practices with players without numbers. And with also no depth chart, too.
He was not happy about that.
I think he's projecting.
There's projecting, yes. Thank you. Yeah, very true. Yeah, this didn't seem like that big of a deal to me, but in his defense, there were some people that were really upset about it.
And to be fair, Mac Brown did win a national championship while releasing depth
charts. And to be fair, there was a monkey and a stripper and an incident this summer.
That part, when I read it, literally made me laugh out loud. Yeah. Like, at my phone, in my room, I just started cackling.
I like retired John McClain because he has more time to be feisty on Twitter.
Yes. Oh, but some of his Astros tweets are also hilarious.
On it.
Hyperbole McClain, just building up to a pathetic is the best.
Yeah.
I love that, man.
Pathetic.
That's all right. Absolutely pathetic, sacrum.
So we've been talking about throughout the day because I guess there's a West Virginia Pitt rivalry that is a really, really big deal.
The backyard brawl.
I'll
Vanessa.
Tell you how I first learned about this was Pat McAfee, who is from Pittsburgh but played at West Virginia, had a bunch of tweets about it. I thought this was like just Pat McAfee's my hometown team plays my alma mater. Turns out this is a big deal.
Oh, my God, Vanessa, you don't even understand. I mean, this is essentially a border war, and it's a shame that we haven't seen them play each other much, but this is, I think, arguably the best rivalry no one's heard about.
Do they play every year?
They used to.
Okay, it used to be like a heated rivalry.
They used to both be in the Big East, but then due to conference realignment, Pitt went to the ACC, and West Virginia went to the Big 12. So there has
been... But there's still bad blood.
Very bad. It's the worst blood.
It's the worst blood. Kaden Slovis, Pitt's quarterback, spoke about the rivalry in the upcoming game against West Virginia at a pep rally.
Okay. And I got one more thing to say. West Virginia!
And, I mean, that's consistent. Look, it's great that it's back. These are two. I mean, West Virginia used to be a lot better than they are. I think joining the Big 12, things have kind of gone the wrong way for them. And Pitt has a fantastic history as a football program. It's probably never going to be what it used to be, especially in the 1980s. But, I mean, they had Tony Dorsett. They had Dan Marino there. It's interesting to see that this is back. And I think that this is one of the better unheralded rivalry. So it's great. This game's going to be on tonight at 6 o'clock on ESPN. This is a great way to start the football season, but it had me wondering, what's the best rivalry that nobody talks about in college football, NFL, wherever? A rivalry that is sort of forgotten and it shouldn't be. I mean, this is great. Sean found before the show. What did Owen Schmidt have to say after a number, what, 1-2 West Virginia team lost to Pitt?
Yeah, they're number 2 in 2007, last game of the season. It's the greatest West Virginia team of all time, playing like a pretty mediocre
Pat White,
Pitt.
Slayton.
Exactly, playing a pretty mediocre Pitt. They obviously lost 13-9, and it was a Rich Rodriguez high-flying offense, and they only scored 9 points against Pitt. And he said, quote, "We blew it against the bleepest bleeping team in the bleeping world."
I love it.
It's great.
All right. So rivalries that have flown under the radar. Not the best rivalries. If you call us and you say, oh,
Yankees,
Duke,
Red
UNC.
Sox.
If you say, what'd you say?
Yankees, Red Sox.
Yeah, like Yankees, Red Sox, Duke, UNC. We know about those. 713-780-3776. Rivalries that are not as hyped up as they should be. Pauly G, go first.
Texas A&M, because they don't play each other anymore. I know that everyone hypes it up, but it's kind of funny. It is a forgotten rivalry. They haven't played a game. They should be watching this game tonight. People from UT and Texas A&M, and stop being, let's be honest, chicken bleep, and actually play each other. You're both of you. I will bring you together. You can hate me. You're both cowards.
Oh, God, it's going to hurt us because we got to play the SEC schedule, too. We're the Aggies. Oh, we're UT. We can't let little brother get the edge on us.
They already have the edge on you. Like, just play, you losers. God, it drives me crazy.
Anyway. All right, mine. I went to a Division II school. I went to University of Indianapolis in the Great Lakes Valley Conference. So mine is University of Indianapolis, and this year they were ranked number one, of course, unanimous in the preseason poll. But each year, Truman State University, located in Missouri, gives them some help.
No, that's too popular.
Shout out to Division Two, baby. Shout out to Division Two.
Everyone knows about that one.
Yeah, the number one team in the country. You're picking that one? Oh, cool.
Yeah, my
chalk.
Rob would like to talk about his favorite under the radar rivalry. Rob, what's up?
Hey, guys. This goes way before your time, but there was a fierce rivalry between LSU and Tulane way back when.
Ooh.
And I sat in Tulane Stadium, and I want to say the year was 1970, 72, but LSU had beaten Tulane 25 years straight.
Wow.
And we won that game. We won that game 14-7.
It's interesting to think of the idea of Tulane ever being good at football. I'll be honest.
I think Tulane was one of the founding members of the SEC.
They were. Shout out to Willie Fritz, head coach. I want them to get it turned around.
I was jealous of everyone in my high school that went to Tulane, of which there were many.
Really?
Smart.
Why is that?
It's in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, you wouldn't survive.
Me?
Nashville and Vegas and New Orleans.
Well, New Orleans especially. Like, I like Vegas. I like Nashville. New Orleans is different. New Orleans is special. I went the first time I went to New Orleans, I met somebody on the last day of the trip.
Of course you did.
She took me on a tour of the city and like introduced me to like the New Orleans nightlife that you if you're a visitor you don't see. And I was like, "Oh my God, this place is incredible." I've had to cancel the last two New Orleans trips that I was going to go on, like last second too. So it's been way too long. I love that city.
Sean, do you have an under the radar rivalry that you like? You're a Texas guy.
Yeah, but this is not Texas related at all, because I feel like maybe it's because I'm so close to that. I feel like all the Texas rivalries it's pretty well trodden ground. But I would say, and this is one Paul can maybe even talk to a little bit, Oregon versus UW.
Oh,
I went to a game actually.
The Apple Cup.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny because UW is very cocky because they weren't that bad too long ago. And now they've been kind of rough.
Somebody brought up Sam Houston versus Stephen F. Austin. That's a great one.
Yeah, Battle of the Piney Woods.
That's a Piney Woods. Piney Woods.
See, that's one where I'm like, I guess that is underrated for most people.
For all the country, yeah. Yes. I mean, country. Now, here, if you're here in the area, you probably know about it. But yeah, no, that's a great rivalry.
If you worked at the flagship, you really knew about it because we play commercials for it over and over again.
The news station I worked at, Randy McAvoy went to Sam Houston, the news director. There were a lot of Sam Houston alums in the newsroom just by coincidence. So that was a rivalry that we heard a lot about. UT versus Arkansas used to be big, says King of All Twitches.
Katie versus Austin Wesley. We're going to high school here.
Yeah.
Well,
Dylan versus Katie.
And that's
Dylan.
A good one, but that's a well-known one.
Katie versus North Shore is...
It is.
I've gone to a couple of Katie North Shore games that they have especially one where there's like a goal line stand at the end and North Shore won. Like, they've lived up to the billing.
All right. This was a good segment. We may touch on this again later in the show because a lot of people had some good call-ins on this. But coming up, we're going to touch on the Astros, including a rumor on somebody they could get. That's coming up next.
You are listening to...
Hey! Yeah, you! You better be listening to ESPN 97.5. And don't you dare turn that down!
ESPN 97.5.